This is the MLW Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I am your host, Striga. It has been a while, mainly because I had been very busy and didn't really have the time to record a show. And also, my co-host, my main man, Dylan, he had been busy too. He has been visiting family over the weekend, so we had to push back the recording. But here we are after a while now. Dylan, how are you doing?
Striga, it's so great to be back. I missed doing the show so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, me too.
It felt like there was a void in my life right now, a void in my heart. But we're back again, and I cannot wait to do this show this week. I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, me too. So, obviously, there has been happening a lot, not only in Japan, but also in the US. The week after we did our last show, New Japan ran their G1 in USA specials, and Dylan, it really feels like everyone and their grandma already reviewed those two shows. So,
not their grandma. I think that's being a little dramatic. Maybe your grandma.
It certainly feels like basically everyone came up under the rock and did a review on those shows.
But they were huge shows.
Yes, they were huge shows, and it shows that New Japan really was incredibly successful in doing these shows, because not only the New Japan diehard fans, the fans that support New Japan since a lot of years, I watched these shows, but also a lot of new fans were attracted to the product and really watched these shows and wanted to learn more about New Japan Pro Wrestling, and that's great. But here on this show, I feel like we shouldn't go through these shows, because a lot of people have done that, and it's almost 2 weeks gone, and we should just take a brief look back at those shows. What was the main thing you took away from these two events in the US?
Okay, I feel very terrible that we're not going to run through every match, and we can't get to my Chase Owens takes, unfortunately. But my takeaways from the show, I think, it depends. The first night you could go one of two ways with. The show in ring was pretty good. I won't say a home run, but like the production snafus and particularly the commentary of night one was embarrassingly awful. I have to say in English. I stupidly watched this in English instead of Japanese. I don't know why I do that sometimes, but I did it for this because I thought this was a big enough show to where that's what most people would be seeing. And I got away very dissatisfied with the commentary of Jim Ross and Josh Barnett. I thought we saw multiple production snafus as well. When Naito came out, they played Ishii's music at first and had to, you know, go through that. JR got he confused Zack Sabre Jr. and Will Ospreay on commentary, which was very funny. And Evil Ibushi as well. But it was a very poor night on that, and I thought it really dragged the shows down. I saw a Twitter poll of the show, of the first show, and most of the answers were fives and sixes. And that's where I would kind of put it too, as about a five. And I thought they needed a 10. Like seven if you're really positive. I just thought it wasn't what they needed the first night, the first show. The second show was a lot better. Not just in production style, but also in ring. I thought they really hit it out of the park. And the first show had some good matches at the end. Nothing against the in ring. But the second show, especially the matches, both Ishii matches, to me, I don't know how you watch the show, and I know everybody's talking about Omega, but I don't know how you watch the show and don't think Ishii is one of the best wrestlers in the world. when you look at his match with Zack Sabre Jr. as well as Kenny Omega, I thought he was the true MVP of all of this. Although I thought they totally did the right thing putting Omega over here. I know we talked about this, we previewed this. I think I said Omega would win. I think you said Elgin would have a shot to win. And it was kind of like the whoever would win that match would probably win this thing. And Omega won it. He won the title. I think that was totally the right move. I think he is absolutely the right person to carry this brand, this USA brand. I think the buzz overall, despite the shortcomings of the first show that I had, I think overall the buzz for it was really big. That was just sold out. I think that's too much of a talking point because that's not even half the battle, selling out. I think the grand scale of things is much bigger than just selling out this show. I think the people watching are much more important than that. And yeah, so overall, I would say the second show was really great, outside of an absolutely atrocious Billy Gunn performance, with Tanahashi, which was worse than I think everyone thought, or as bad as I thought.
Really?
I thought it was absolutely a terrible match.
Wow.
Did you like it? Did you like it?
No, I thought it was completely fine.
No. What are you talking about, Stringer? I think maybe it was because they pulled each other's pants down. I think that may have been what done it.
That part but, wasn't my favorite either, but except for that, I thought Billy Gunn looked great. It was in great shape.
What about the chin locks he did? Chin locks that he did?
He looked in great shape for the age he's in. I thought he looked in great shape. It certainly wasn't a great match or a good match, but I thought it was at least a fine match. And Tanahashi did his best to get a great match out of out of Billy Gunn. And so I don't have anything bad to say about that match, really.
15 minutes of this,
yes,
chin locks and pulling each other's pants down. I hated this match. I had it as a quarter of a star on my rating. I thought it was a terrible, terrible match.
Wow.
But I apologize.
Yeah, totally can't
I apologize to William S. On this one. But, Tanahashi, I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking even booking this match. I just thought it sent all the wrong message. And also on the first night, another thing about Billy Gunn, not only was he bad, he was so offensively incompetent in the ring that he couldn't even protect his opponent, who also happened to be one of the biggest stars of the company, where he nearly killed Tanahashi. That was honestly the talking point I saw most after the first night.
That was bad.
Yeah, that was the thing I heard about most, more than any of the other matches on the card. And there were some okay matches on the first night. It wasn't a home run.
The great thing about me watching these shows is that I watch these shows entirely without any buzz on Twitter or anything that could distract me from just watching these shows and could distract my opinion on these shows. So I just watched these shows completely without any impression, and it was great for me. I enjoyed those shows very much. And one thing that concerned people almost as much as the Billy Gunn Tanahashi match was Cody getting his shot at the IWGP Heavyweight title against Kazuchika Okada. And this match, I thought, was great. There were some parts in this match where Cody missed some spots, yes, but overall, the overall story arc that they tried to tell and they ended up telling was, in my opinion, very, very good. The story of Okada totally diminishing Cody in front of his wife and then pulling him up for another Rainmaker, and then, of course, Kenny Omega returning the favor to Cody and trying to throw in the white towel, or trying to make Brandy throw in the towel for her husband. I thought this story was told brilliantly and made for a very, very good main event. Very great mixture of Japanese style of wrestling and the American style of wrestling, both in the ring and in the ring wrestling wise and storytelling wise.
Not only that moment, but also with Cody trying to use the one-winged angel to win in response to that. I thought it was good. I'm with you. I've always said that, Cody, he gets a lot of flack with people like that, but I always thought he was good, and I thought this was a good match. I won't say a great match, but I had it, I think about 3.5-star kind of range, 4 stars if you're really liked it, but I think it was good. Nothing wrong with it at all. Probably a little higher than his Fale match, or Kata's Fale title defense, but Cody did fine in the main event, and I think it definitely set up a lot of where they're going in the future, and I think that was good. I thought the most important part of both of these shows is that they felt newsworthy, ultimately. Yes. Not only with the title defense, but it felt like they were setting up things for the future with Kenny and Cody. Exactly. Where do you think they're going with those two?
Oh, they are going to have a slow burn on that, because after the second night of these specials, the Bullet Club made a photo in unison. They stood together, and so they are probably having small cracks within the Bullet Club over the next couple of months.
And after Omega's tremendous main event against Ishii on night two, Cody teased Dissension,
right,
only to put the title on Omega afterwards. And everything was good, but I have a conspiracy theory of sorts on this. So maybe that's not the right word, but a lot of people have been going back and forth on what Kenny Omega's future is in regards to the Tokyo Dome on January 4th. And I think we both know the two people that people are talking about most is Cody, obviously, as well as Kota Ibushi. I think a lot of people are speculating who between those two that Omega will face. And I have a theory on that that moment, because I think they planted great seeds with Omega and Cody here. But what if something happens that nobody even thought about would happen, which would mean Kenny Omega reuniting with Kota Ibushi, form a tag team against Cody and a Bullet Club partner of his choosing at the Tokyo Dome.
That's
my prediction. That's my prediction for the Tokyo Dome, is that the Golden Lovers reunite.
Wow.
And that's where they're setting up. I think that's why they avoided having this match. Because if they avoided having that match and then just went to Cody, they would lose that kind of match. But now they can slow burn it even more with Omega and Ibushi, obviously setting up a match down the line even more. So I think that's where they're going. If they do that, you heard it here first, people, because that's what I'm thinking right now. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, well, we're eventually going to have Cody versus Kenny Omega. Maybe in the Tokyo Dome, maybe a little earlier. Certainly a very, very interesting idea you have right there. And so after Kenny won the title, you already said it, Kenny Omega is probably the best guy to put the belt on. He cut an incredible promo saying how much the entire Bullet Club, how much they rose to the occasion, and how much each and everyone proved that they are more than just guys that are brought in to do a job. And he wanted to take the belt around the world, and just an incredible babyface promo at the end of those shows, a real great feel-good moment for him. And I think it sent home the fans happy, because they wanted Kenny to win. And so, what do you think?
It was funny, because during that match, not to cut you off here, but it was funny, during that match, I felt like the crowd was leaning toward Ishii at moments, even though they still wanted Omega to win.
You know,
Ishii did a great job to bring them to his side a little bit.
Yeah,
and these crowds, I think you have to mention that these crowds, another point on Cody that we didn't mention is that this was more of an American crowd, a lot of Bullet Club fans, pretty much everyone loved Bullet Club in the crowd, but Cody did a great job of putting Okada in a babyface light and working heel despite the fact that they were all on his group side. I thought that was very memorable to note.
You know, it's a funny thing that happens to me all the time when I watch wrestling live, that I cheer on a guy, and in the end, when the other guy wins, I'm happy too, because I know he's the right guy to win the match.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, because with Ishii and Goto as well, I always bring this up, my favorite thing about those two as performers, and we saw it again here, it's like, there is no way he's going to win this match,
realistically,
when you think about it. He's not going to beat Omega, but he makes you believe he can during this match. And I think that's the mark of a great pro wrestler, just like his match with Naito in Japan. His title shot. You want to believe he can do it. Maybe he can win. He deserves it. Come on. You know, but he just did such a great job. I love that match.
Exactly. Yeah. So what do you think is possible next year for New Japan? Takaki Kidani came out and said that the shows obviously were a great success, and they were a much bigger success, truth to be told, than we two expected them to be. And he wants to return to the U.S. in March or April for a quote-unquote touring-style schedule. Whatever that means, you know, that could mean 16 shows, that could mean 3 shows in 3 different cities. It's just up in the air right now. Dave Meltzer said that they wanted to do a show in New Orleans during WrestleMania weekend. Others have said that they won't do that, so we are going to have to sit and wait for that. But they definitely will return, and March, April sounds like as good as any month.
That's true, that's true. The first show got off the ground really well, but that's still not less than half the battle right now. They still have a long way to go, in my opinion, before things can just... Before they can get to where they wanted to accomplish their goals, I feel like. Because I think that they will end up running a WrestleMania show. I think that makes all the sense in the world to do, in my opinion. Not with any sort of inside information or anything like that. I just think logically that is the thing to do. I don't know about this touring schedule. I believe we talked about this before, because I don't know if we talked about it ourselves or someone asked a question, but it was something pertaining to what they were going to do and if there would be two different brands.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we both basically said that probably wouldn't happen. But who knows what Kidani's plans are. If he saw this show and saw a gold mine and it blew him away more than even he thought, you never know what he could do. He always strikes me as an aggressive guy.
So we
don't know what he's planning.
So the immediate plans, of course, are opening an office in Los Angeles and also opening a dojo again in Los Angeles. The former dojo that New Japan ran was, of course, the Inoki Dojo, and now New Japan is going to open up their own dojo there to train guys. Going to be interesting.
Hopefully it's nicer than the old Inoki Dojo, which was a garage.
Right.
A garage.
Dojo is a very nice way to say garage. and so, yeah, that's going to happen next year, and I just hope they don't rush it. You know, with you saying Kidani always seems to be a very aggressive guy, and this aggressiveness has led New Japan to this big success in the USA. But I hope they don't rush it. But I think they analyze it pretty well and will run buildings that they can sell out next year again.
Some people say 20,000, like Kenny Omega.
Yeah.
That was really dumb. That was not a smart to say. That's not going to happen. You're not going to draw 20,000 fans. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right now.
So, another thing that came up earlier on this day, on the Monday we're recording it, are the complete G1 Climax cards for the shows from the first day up until the second to last day. We have the complete cards. And for the final night, we have two matches. For the final night, we have Matt and Nick Jackson, the Young Bucks, defending the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team title against Taguchi Japan, Ryusuke Taguchi, and Ricochet. And we have War Machine defending the IWGP Tag Team title against Cody and Hangman Page. And, Dylan, I don't know if you've seen these undercards that the G1 shows have, but I very much like those cards because it's not only preludes to G1 Climax matches, but there are also some very intriguing matches, and the addition of Kota Ibushi to those undercards make the undercards really, really cool. For example, on the second night of G1, we have the opening match, Zack Sabre Jr. and El Desperado against Kota Ibushi and Hirai Kawato. We have, for example, where is he? Wait a sec. Ibushi. I'm searching Ibushi again. We have another opening match with Togi Makabe and Taguchi against Ibushi and Shoto Umino. Then we have a match, Hiroshi Tanahashi and Ryosuke Taguchi against Kota Ibushi and Hirai Kawato. So a lot of interesting matches, and also the Young Lions get their chance on these cards. We have, for example, Chase Owens taking on Katsuya Kitamura, and also Chase Owens taking on Tomoyuki Oka again. Ren Narita in the news, Young Lion gets his matches, or one or two matches. Also, Tetsuhiro Yagi gets his matches. So, a lot of cool stuff on the undercards. They changed the talent on these undercards. For example, Liger only has three matches during the G1 Climax. Then they bring in Tiger Mask for 5 matches. On the second to last day, Yoshinobu Kanemaru has his first match on the G1 Tour. They bring in the Young Bucks in the end. They bring in Ricochet in the end. And very, very cool stuff on these undercards to keep them fresh.
Yeah, I mean, that's really nice. I feel like if you're going to be someone, and I think both of us would fall into this category, of people who watch all the shows for G1 over this 20-day period, at some point we're probably going to get burnt out and probably start skipping these undercards. Now, maybe you won't. Did you do that last year? I don't think you did. I saw you tweeting about the undercards late last year to the G1. I will give you big props for that.
Yes, I was the marathon man.
Yes, yeah, you were the Iron Man of the G1, truly, above all any of the rest of us, because you were on all 20 nights. But me, I think sometimes I could just get caught up watching like 5 hours of Jaguar Yokota matches and just end up missing the undercard. So sometimes I won't mean to, it just may happen. But I will try. If you try, I'm going to keep up with you.
There are going to be some matches that will be very hard to watch when I watch these lineups. When I see some Yujiro Takahashi matches, I don't know.
That is true. That is true.
For example, July 29, Minoru Suzuki and Taichi versus Tama Tonga and Yujiro Takahashi.
That doesn't suck. But at least Yujiro has the women.
Yes.
Right?
He does.
Right? That's all I put.
Okay, so, Dylan, enough G1, because something happened on the day, 2 days after the G1 in USA specials. There was a Lionsgate show, and Yuji Nagata took the mic after the main event, and he mentioned Young Lions Cup, and the place exploded.
It's something everyone wants to see. We've been saying this. I've been saying this for months, Striga. The Young Lions Cup needs to come back.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. They haven't announced it. It looks like it's going to be... It's not during the G1 climax like you wanted it to be. It's probably going to be at one or two of the following Lionsgate shows. So, they have a lot of talent they can bring in. Of course, that immediately made me think of an inter-promotional Young Lions Cup. But A, that would be very hard to do. And B, New Japan has so much talent on their own they can throw in the right there.
Yeah, they have enough guys to do it on their own, really. But I think that's a great idea, too, to do it on the Lionsgate shows. That's a fine idea. I just thought it would help, you know, help freshen up the undercards and not do these. Because ultimately, these tag matches, while kind of cool, they're more ultimately for build-up purposes, or like that Yujiro match, kind of like completely meaningless. But, you know, I think the Young Lions Cup is just a great thing. I love that it could be coming back soon. I can't wait to watch it. I hope, you know, even if they maybe one or two guys, outside dudes from somewhere, would be great. But like you said, they've got a lot of guys already. This is why the Young Lions Cup hasn't been around for all this time, is because they didn't have enough guys on their own. They had like two or three guys at a time.
Yeah.
So now that they have them, let's bring it back. First time since, I believe, 2005.
Right. 2005, yes. Hiroki Goto won.
Hiroki Goto.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah,
Yoshitatsu was there. It was a great, and he was actually good then. But it was that was a really good Young Lions Cup. I remember checking out matches a long time ago from that. Those guys were really good. The crowd really loved those dudes. But this one is going to be just as good, I'm sure. I can't wait to see it. A lot of these guys have tons of potential. I have to back. I know a lot of people are probably going to be going with Kitamura and his grill that he has that he's brought in recently. I have to go with the underdog Kawato as my favorite Young Lion right now. Yagi looks good too. These guys just pop out of nowhere and they're like already good.
It's,
you know, like Uno.
Amazing! It's amazing. Yeah. Yes, those Lionsgate shows are so incredible. When you just watch the first two matches of each show, it's incredible.
Yeah,
and also, Dylan, as you just mentioned, Kitamura. One match popped into my mind that's going to be on one of the G1 undercards in Tokyo Kurikan Hall, July 22nd. The fourth night of the G1 climax. Third match, Hiroshi Tanahashi and Katsuya Kitamura versus Yuji Nagata and Tomoyuki Oka.
Oh, man.
Yes.
That is going to be a hoot right there. That is going to be a bona fide hoot.
Bona fide hoot, definitely. And, you know, G1 climax is is around summertime, and for me it's vacation time too, so the two of us, we already have talked about that, and we are going to try to cover the entire G1 climax. We haven't talked about how we do it. We're certainly not going to throw out a show every day, maybe every second, maybe we watch three shows and then do a review. It depends on how much newsworthy or review-worthy stuff is on these shows.
Yeah, I think the first 3 or 4 days are all going to be newsworthy, and the last couple of days, and then all the parts of the middle, we may take a day or two off to kind of bunch stuff together, what I'm saying?
Yeah, so it's basically going to be small bulletin-like shows just covering those events. But I'm really looking forward to the G1 climax. It looks like it's going to be an amazing time during the summer, not only for the G1 climax matches themselves, but also these tag matches. As I said, they look very intriguing, and they got some title matches and some build up for title matches here on these cards too. So it's going to be very interesting, definitely.
It always is. Always one of the best events of the summer for any wrestling fans, especially the Japanese wrestling fans. Hopefully we can get a lot of new people watching and hopefully listening to this show. But like last year, we picked up a lot of new listeners and a lot of new friends made through the G1 last year. So I can't wait for this whole event and this whole experience.
Right, and with so many people covering New Japan Pro Wrestling, I feel like it's becoming more and more an obligation for us to also look at different promotions, at other promotions in Japan. Of course, New Japan is always going to be a focus on this show too when they run big shows, but there are other promotions in Japan that really thrive right now. And when thinking about the Young Lions Cup, Dylan, in my mind, I compared the two rookie systems that New Japan and DDT have. And I have a take on that, and I want you to hear me out first and then give your opinion on the take I have. Because I think both rookie systems in New Japan and DDT, they are completely different from one another, but they both make absolute sense when you make the sports comparison. For example, New Japan Pro Wrestling. The rookies in New Japan start at the bottom, and they have a hard time climbing the ranks. They battle each other to improve their positions, and often they are on the same level. Like right now, we have in New Japan where the Young Lions often wrestle to 10-minute time limit draws. They often are on the same level, and eventually they get a win. That's considered an upset victory over a mid-card guy, a lower-ranked mid-card guy. A Young Lion gets a win over him, and that's considered an upset victory. So he slowly but surely climbs up the ranks. They maybe get sent to an excursion, which in European football would be like a loan of a young player to another club, and they come back to the bigger club and then become a huge star there. So that would be the comparison for New Japan. DT is completely different. The rookies, they also start at the bottom, but they advance not by climbing the ranks like in New Japan, but they advance according to their individual strengths. For example, rookies from the same class right now are King of DDT tag team champion in Katsusada Higuchi and working dark matches with Nobuhiro Shimatani. So just like in sports, some talents advance to the big stage while others never make it and stay in the quote unquote minor leagues. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think both have their pros. They both have their pros and cons. I really like how they do it in both ways. I think, like you said, they both work in different ways. One's not really better necessarily, they're just different. I kinda like it when, in New Japan, I think there is room for a supernova type person, not like Shinsuke Nakamura, when they did it with him. But like a rookie that really outshines everyone and gets a lot of wins, I think there is room for that sort of person. And I think they could do it. Like I said, they've done it before, notably with Nakamura, with questionable success at the time. But I think there's room for something like that to happen even in their system. But for the most part, how they've done it, it looks good. My only problem is how they really do the excursions lately, because to me, Sho and Yo are not gaining much, if anything, from their current excursion. And I wish that would be handled a little better, more so than the act itself of the excursion system and all on the same level. I like that part. How they're doing the excursions could be done a little better. And DDT is just, I think they've done an awesome job with Higuchi, who has clearly done great. Ueno,
Ueno is fantastic. My God.
I love him. I've always loved him. Everyone's always loved Higuchi. I've always loved Ueno. With DNA, and I love both of them, but don't get me wrong. But Ueno, super underrated. If you do have DDT streaming services,
yes, watch his matches.
You have to check this dude out. He's really good.
You have to watch Shunma Katsumata versus Yuki Ueno from the latest DNA show.
Yes, the dude is great. I'm telling you, he is someone that you're going to hear about from DDT in the future because he rocks. And Higuchi, everybody knows is great. If you have any sort of knowledge of him, he's just a great wrestler, and I have no problem at all with him climbing up the ranks. He's fit in great with the talent, so I think, you know, it works in both ways. You know, it works in both ways, and in New Japan, the future can, you know, it could go a lot of different ways with these guys, because we've seen a lot of young lions come and be great and not necessarily work out. I think, like with Yoshitatsu, who was like a really popular young lion in mm-hmm. his day. So super popular, really talented. When he came back, yeah, his injuries had a lot to do with that, I think. But, and we've seen guys like, even Desperado was actually a really talented young lion, really good. I thought I had a really high hopes for him. In Mexico, he was great. It hasn't quite taken off yet, though. We see that we're big fans of his, I think,
yeah,
on this show.
He's bouncing back right now.
Yeah, exactly. And he's just now getting there, and we'll see what the future holds with him, if they capitalize on it or not. So, you know, it's just a wait-and-see process with the Young Lions, because these guys all look really great right now, but they could come back, and it might not work out, but it might help make them even bigger stars when they come back. So yeah. I think both of the systems really work well. Neither one is really better. They're just different.
They are very much different, and I want to say this about Sho and Yohei. I don't know if they necessarily gain very much wrestling-wise from their excursion to the U.S. right now. But what they do, they've been in Mexico, they've been in the U.S., and in last weekend they have been in the U.K. too. They are gaining very much life experience right now, and that's important too.
Yeah, I just think the time could be, with all of this time spent doing basically nothing. Sho tried to get an MMA. It's so bad that they don't wrestle enough, so he's just trying to do MMA. His opponents are dropping out.
Yeah,
you know, I feel for those dudes. Like, honestly, I'm not trying to downplay them at all, because they were really great young lions in Mexico. I watched them. Yohei especially struggled in Mexico, to be honest with you. Sho was pretty good actually, still in Mexico. In America, they both look good. I think Sho has more upside. Personally, I've always thought that with Sho and Yohei, if I had to pick one of the two. But I just think it's going to be a wait-and-see process with all, not just them, but any of the young lions right now. We can't say who's going to be a star. And I think that adds its own positive and negatives to it, because in DDT, we know they have big expectations for Higuchi. You know he's going to be around for a while. You know he's going to be a big part of that show. In New Japan, we don't know who they have pegged outside of Oka, obviously, but that's not on the show. That's not based on stuff on the show. But we don't know who really is going to break out between these guys, and I think that adds a fun element of intrigue to follow these guys and see who does stand out and who does break out eventually.
Yeah, you know, I accidentally mentioned Nobuhiro Shimatani being a classmate of Higuchi. That's not true. I think Shimatani debuted after Higuchi, but I can name another one. Higuchi being tag team champion right now, while Dai Suzuki has this losing gimmick on the DNA shows.
Yeah.
So my point is still valid.
Yeah, okay. No, I know, because you're totally right. Like, what you said was totally right, though.
Yeah.
And, the DDT Young Lions DNA guys are always great.
Yes. So we just talked about DNA, and I recently sat down and watched the July 4th DNA show, DDT Fighting Geek DNA 34 Starting Over was the title of the show, drawing 883 fans to Kirkenall, which is honestly great for a show like that, with two guys in the main event that came up in the system that aren't really well-known guys as of right now, with Shunma Katsumata and Yuki Ueno. We talked about that. We also had Katsusada Higuchi and Ryota Nakatsu against Koki Iwasaki and Naomi Yoshimura. All four guys in this match are outstanding, and this match was great too.
Awesome.
Yes. Koji Kanemoto and Mitsuki Watase was kind of a mirror match, because Mitsuki Watase all of a sudden tried to be Koji Kanemoto and tried to steal his spots, and Kanemoto became more and more upset with Watase and in the end kicked his face in. That was cool too.
I love that description. I know, I can just envision that match in my head and how awesome it is.
Yeah.
I love Koji Kanemoto, and that kind of match is right up the alley of what I want to see.
Right. Tetsuya Endo and Mao had a nice little 10-minute mid-card match. It was cool. Then on the other card, there was a 4-on-1 gauntlet match. Dai Suzuki faced Gurukun Mask, Hideki Suzuki, Jun Kasai, and Nosawa Rongai.
What a team.
Yes. Nosawa, newly named Outside the Nosawa by Google.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that on your Twitter.
Yes. So, basically, it was about that Dai Suzuki, if he had lost to each and everyone in this match, his career would be over. So he lost to Gurukun Mask in 44 seconds. He lost to Dai Suzuki after 1 minute 14. Lost to Nosawa... Hideki. Lost to Nosawa in 3:19, and then in the end, he managed to get a time limit draw out of Jun Kasai, so he saved his career.
Thank goodness.
Yes. So, other matches on this show, very weird tag team, Kotaro Suzuki and Shiro Koshinaka, against Daiki Shimomura and Nobuhiro Shimatani. It was what it was, basically.
What?
And yes, and in the opening match, Cody Hall and Mike Bailey beat Diego and Rekka. And you know, Diego, or as he was known as Guanchulo, he has been coming to Japan for a long time now. His first match in DDT was in 2013. He came back as Guanchulo, and now he is a regular for DDT. He's also doing translations for some promos. And he's no longer Guanchulo, but he is Diego, and he's with the All Out group of champion Konosuke Takeshita. And also, slowly but surely, this Diego fella has become an incredibly crisp wrestler. His moves are, they look so good, and he moves so well in the ring, and he is just an incredible asset to have as a mid-card guy for DDT. And so, this show, you should really watch this one. And also, 2 days earlier, they had a show from Shinjuku where Konosuke Takeshita defended his KOD openweight title against Mike Bailey. Very good match as well. Bailey really has, he really fits into DDT with everything he does. So, very, very, very interesting times for DDT. They are going to have a show in Kirkenhall on July 23rd. That show is going to be headlined by Konosuke Takeshita versus Keisuke Ishii for the KOD Openweight title. Keisuke Ishii is one of my favorite wrestlers in DDT, and I always wanted him to have a run with the KOD Openweight title, but I don't think his time is right now, because there is a bigger match on the horizon than this one. Just quickly opening up the card. If the DDT,
maybe we could see him more in All Japan, because he's a really talented wrestler.
Yeah,
Ishii.
Yeah. He certainly.
I'm totally with you that he's one of my favorite guys too.
Right. On this same show where Konosuke Takeshita is defending his title against Keisuke Ishii, we have we have two other title matches. Come on now. Okay. We have a tag team title match. Shigehiro Irie and Katsusada Higuchi defend against the big dog, Shuji Ishikawa and Matt Pauly. We have a match for both the DDT Extreme and the Iron Man Heavy Metal title again. Daisuke Sasaki, the champion of the Extreme, against Joey Ryan, the Iron Man champion. And some other matches on this card, but the big show of the year for DDT is the one in Sumo Hall, August 20. And on that show, in the main event, it's going to be the winner of the July 23rd KOD title match, either Konosuke Takeshita or Keisuke Ishii, defending against Tetsuya Endo, the winner of this year's King of DDT. So I guess it's safe to say that Endo and Takeshita are going to headline Sumo Hall.
The story continues.
Right. They had a 60-minute time limit draw, which I thought was a very good match. And also,
yeah, me too.
Also
we talked about that match.
Right. And also Tetsuya Endo, his matches in the King of DDT were outstanding as well. The final show of the King of DDT tournament was on June 25. Three great matches, both the semifinals in their own way and the finals of that tournament were great. You should check that out as well. And also on this card for Sumo Hall, August 20, we have a special singles match between Zachiro Takagi and Dancho Kodino. That's going to be something else, I guess.
It will be a happening.
It will be a match.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, we have the coronation of the very first KOD 10-man tag team champions, which is, Dylan, it's very interesting since DDT doesn't have a group stable that consists of 5 wrestlers.
Yeah. Do we know who's going to be in this?
No, we don't. We don't.
Well, we will after this night. we will have a 5-man group.
We have a match for the KOD 6-man tag team title, the Kings Group, the Champions Group. Kudo, Yukio Sakaguchi and Masahiro Takanashi defend against Dick Togo, Yasuo Urano and Antonio Honda. Kind of a wild card team of DDT, former DDT wrestlers, current DDT wrestlers, DDT legends in this title match. And also announced for this show, special participation, Naomichi, Maro Fuji, and Liliko.
it's gonna happen. It will be a happening.
You know, this show always brings together all the DDT promotions, all the DDT sub-brands. I think last year we didn't have a Basara match on this show, I think. But usually Tokyo Yoshi Pro is featured, Ganbare in some way is featured too, DNA is featured, and so every group that DDT considers to be one of their sub-brands is going to be on that show. It's going to be a very long show again with like 12 matches or something like that. And it's the highlight of DDT every year. So already looking forward to August 20. That's 1 week after the G1 finishes. And probably around that time, we are going to be back in the wrestling bubble after a couple of days off after the G1 finals.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I wish Basara would have a sumo match like on the show, that tournament they did. The ropes. That's what I want to see.
You know, I've been checking out some Basara lately. It's not necessarily the best in-ring product wrestling-wise, but man, these characters they have, they are so funny. You know, Daichi Kasato is now the best stretch man version 3. We have Fuma and his group. What's his group called? Let me just check that out. Fuma has a heavy metal gimmick. So he's the heavy metal wrestler. And Fumu has a stable called the Iron Priest. with Madoka and Yusuke Kubo. And Madoka has a new name now. He's Hagane Shino. So they are the heavy metal guys. And then, of course, we have the Trans M group. We have Trans M Hiroshi. And we have Trans M Ryuchi. And sometimes we also have Trans M Shinya, which is Shinya Ishida. So basically on this show I watched where Fuma and Trans M Hiroshi fought to a double KO, the fans had a chant, a dueling chant of USA and heavy metal. That was the dueling chant.
Whoa. Right there, I think you should be a part of the stable, Striga.
Yeah, I feel so, man. Maybe.
Trans Am Striga.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I get to wear these cool suits that Trans Am Hiroshi has.
Yes, exactly.
Also, I get an F5 as my finishing move, like Trans Am Ryuchi has. Yeah. Sounds great. Obviously. Sounds great. Yeah, that's my part on DDT. Haven't been able to check that out lately, but certainly very, very great stuff from DDT. But Dylan, you and I, we always, for the past couple of months, wanted to check out another promotion in Japan that is incredibly popular. DDT is one of them, and Dragon Gate is another one of them. So we wanted to talk about the King of Gate tournament that started already at the beginning of May and finished on June 11th. With the finals of T-Hawk versus Naoki Doi. Dylan, overall, what did you think about the King of Gate, and what did you think about getting back into Dragon Gate, watching some of their stuff?
That is true. I still feel a bit betrayed by you. I did watch the Dead or Alive show.
I watched it too, eventually.
Okay, good. Okay, well, that you've redeemed yourself on that one. At least we both went through it. But this King of Gate tournament, there were some good matches in it, don't get me wrong. There was one in particular that I really enjoyed between Shingo Takagi and BB Hulk.
Yeah, that was
June
good.
First show. Yeah, I like that show. I like the match between Shingo and Mochizuki as well, which was another
yes.
really cool match.
First night of the tournament where Mochizuki pulled an upset. I think you could say an upset over Shingo Takagi, the big heel in the promotion, yeah?
Yep, yeah. So I really enjoyed that a lot, that match there. You know, there were some shows that, you know, it feels like last year this tournament was longer. I don't know if this was just me, because we watched this last year.
No, I think the tournament itself was about the same length as last year.
Yeah, I think it was. It felt like it was longer last year, too. It felt like, you know, I don't know, maybe it was just on that end. There's also a match with Keiji Muto on one of these shows. He was in a multi-man tag match that I saw with Yamato and BB Hulk taking on Shingo Takagi, T-Hawk, and Yoshida.
Yeah.
Which is the former Cyber Kong. And
yeah, that was for Shingo Takagi's hometown match.
Yeah, that's right. That's what it was. And that was a fun match. So we got a lot going on here in these places. You know, overall, and the final last night, the shows are put together, the 10th and 11th show on the archive. And the last three matches had the semifinals and the finals. You know, it basically came down to Eita and T-Hawk and Shingo Takagi versus Naruki Doi, which is like two long-term kind of feuds kind of coming together. So I thought Eita, and in all of his matches, every time I see Eita, and I know we've talked about this before, I think Eita is like one of the best guys in Dragon Gate.
Yes.
I always love his style of wrestling that he brings. Even this match with T-Hawk, like, the crowd was all on his side. Eita had a great outside-in tornado DDT that rolled through into his numero uno that he did. It was really cool. I just thought he was beautiful in his match with T-Hawk. And T-Hawk, he throws great chops, but as I mentioned, the crowd was fully behind Eita overall. T-Hawk ended up winning that one with a night ride. The Shingo and Naruki Doi match, Shingo continues in all of his matches that he has. I really enjoyed him a lot in this tournament with, as I mentioned, Hulk Mochizuki. In this match, he had great presence, great instincts as a heel, as he always does. And Berserk ended up interfering, which is Shingo's stable, obviously. It ended up backfiring. Shingo took the box to the head. Doi hit the Doi 555 and Bakatari sliding kick for the win. I could have done without the Berserk stuff, but it was a solid. Both of those semi-main event matches were both solid enough matches.
Yeah, you know about this Berserk stuff. It wasn't the usual nonsensical Berserk interference. In this match, this interference served a purpose, a storyline purpose, because it was the semifinals. T-Hawk had earlier defeated Eita, yeah, and then he was ringside for Takagi and Naoki Doi, and he was the only guy that didn't interfere. The only Berserk guy that didn't interfere, but he kept
right.
He kept down outside the ring, and he just looked at the match and took it as it came for him, who his opponent was going to be. So
that
was a great little detail. But overall, yes, the interference is always something we have to talk about. But before we get to the finals, let me just say this.
Yeah, what do you think about this?
Dragon Gate. Dragon Gate is a completely different thing. It's completely different from everything else. And in my head, I tried to compare it to Lucha, but Lucha works completely differently than Dragon Gate works. My main problem with Dragon Gate is, of course, it's 2017 and there are a lot of moves that have been kicked out of in 2017. But it feels like in Dragon Gate, nothing has a meaning. No move has any kind of meaning. And that's just not my cup of tea.
I think we may get to a match like that in a little, just a little bit.
Oh yeah. And you just have to really accept that most moves don't have a meaning. Or else you won't enjoy this. For some shows, I really can enjoy Dragon Gate, but we talked about it last year. It always feels like they always want to go an extra mile, you know? And
yeah,
it's like that with Naoki Doi, with his Pakatara sliding kicks. It's with Shingo Takagi bursting out two or three Last Falconries, or Made in Japan's. It's everything it is, but there are still very good matches in this tournament. You named Eita, and Eita I thought was great in this one. Also, first night of the tournament, Eita versus Yamato I thought was great. Eita had another match that they didn't make air. I think with Big R Shimizu. No, they didn't. But yeah, then the semifinals, you know. You mentioned him in these semifinals. It's funny. T-Hawk. I like T-Hawk. I think he's good.
Yeah.
But they really want him in the main event. They really, really want T-Hawk to be the big star. And when T-Hawk beat Eita in the semifinal match, you could feel that the air was sucked right out of it. You know,
I completely agree with you on this one, and yeah. I kind of like him too. You know, it's funny because everybody that are Dragon Gate fans always rips on T-Hawk.
Yep.
But when I kind of watch him, it's like I kind of like him. He's kind of cool. He doesn't, you know, he just does some cool stuff. I really like his chops. I think he wrestles pretty good. He's pretty fluid and everything. For this Dragon Gate style, but I completely agree with you on the grand scale of Dragon Gate. That's always been my issue with this company. I think a lot and. Do you think that the fact that his moveset isn't quite as large and best as other guys leads to a lot of hate for T-Hawk? Because we've seen it before with someone like BB Hulk, that also gets railed against at times. But I really enjoy.
I don't know. I think it's mainly the Dragon Gate bookers force feeding T-Hawk to the fans. I think that's the biggest problem here.
Yeah, I know.
I don't want to make a Roman Reigns comparison, but it certainly feels very similar.
Ah, man, I like Roman Reigns.
Yes, I like T-Hawk too.
And I like T-Hawk too, yes. Yeah. T-Hawk's okay. I really like Roman Reigns. But T-Hawk's okay. T-Hawk's pretty good. I like him. I like Eita a lot, like I said. But you mentioned this force feeding of T-Hawk. Let's get to the final match.
No. Okay. Because there's another point I want to make. It's similar to the Eita point. They have a guy, and people love him. People like Eita a lot. And they have other guys. KZ, for example.
He's good.
KZ is very good, and people like KZ too. And Casey had very good matches during the tournament. For example, he had a great 20-minute time limit draw with Jimmy Susumu, which, of course, is another guy people like.
I like Susumu. Yeah. He's good.
They have a lot of young guys right now. They have Big Ash Shimizu. They have Benkei. They have Takehiro Yamamura. They have three guys that are really up-and-coming guys right now. And they really don't get anywhere. And it feels like they have so many young guys and they can't push them all at the same time, which results in some of those guys just being in the mid-card and just being forgotten about. That's bad.
I will say this, though. In Big R's case, he had a great performance and a great match and a great moment when he beat Yamato.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think his time will come eventually. And I love him. I think he's one of my favorite guys.
Big R is amazing. He had an amazing match with Takehiro Yamamura earlier in the year in February as well.
Yep.
And also, all those guys, they always get their moments, yes. For example, Yamamura beat Shima in 6 minutes on the opening night of the King of Gate. It just feels like there are many guys and they just really don't have that much room for them to advance. Whereas if you, for example, take a company like All Japan, they put all their money on Jake Lee because it's their one guy they push right now. Mm-hmm. While in Dragon Gate, you know, my guy Flosh and I, we talked about this tournament too, and we went over the Big Dragon Gate 6-man tag in Ring of Honor in 2006. Wow. And basically all those guys that were in the match 11 years ago are still on top of Dragon Gate right now.
Yeah, I know. I wonder who's booking this company.
Yeah. So, Dragon Gate, incredibly successful. Dragon Gate is a great product if you want to get into Japanese wrestling because it's very easy to understand. They are factions, and these factions fight each other. And that's mostly it. Of course, they have more strings to that and everything else, but the bottom line is they have factions and they fight each other. And they have colors, and that's easy.
Yep.
So, Dragon Gate is a promotion that's completely different than any other group in Japan right now, I would say. But they certainly have their fans, and I used to be one of their fans. I'm not as much into Dragon Gate as I was years ago. And a match, why that is T-Hawk versus Naoki Doi.
It's all this match's fault.
Yes. No, it's not this singular match, but it's the idea of these Dragon Gate big matches.
I don't
know how you felt about this, but the tournament itself, I liked the tournament itself because it limited the Dragon Gate wrestlers to have singles matches that were 20 minutes long and not longer,
mm-hmm.
which is a crucial part of why I don't like Dragon Gate big shows. Because the matches always tend to go longer. And this one, T-Hawk and Naoki Doi went almost 24 minutes, and it felt a lot longer, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
And my main issue was that I couldn't for the life of me see or make out who was going to be the babyface in this match. Because for the majority of the match, T-Hawk was down, and Naoki Doi was on top. And T-Hawk was working from underneath, and he was building sympathy. But then, Berserk interferes into the match, which, not like the interference in the semifinals, it made sense in a way to build up the T-Hawk is just watching this match. In the finals, it was just another nonsensical heel interference with all the guys interfering. Naoki Doi gets powder into his eyes. And so, at this point, while they have been building up sympathy for T-Hawk all the match long, now they are building sympathy for Naoki Doi. And on top of that, we got this move spamming of Bakatara sliding kicks, and in the end, when T-Hawk wins, he has to win with two Night Rides. I don't know, Dilla.
First of all, I totally noted that, the powder to the face, the baking flour to the face. I don't know how this isn't a DQ. Yeah. Stevie Wonder could see this was a foul.
Well,
you know, like it
well,
was so.
The refs
like,
in New Japan don't see Bushi with his red green mist. So man,
I hate that too.
Yeah,
and I don't like it here either. But to me, I think this is a great example of what we were talking about just a second ago. There was a lot of stuff happening in this match, a lot of moving parts. The crowd was all into Doi here, even while he was working on top. It felt like they were behind Doi more than T-Hawk, unfortunately, for what they were trying to do. But then they kind of switched it around at the end. And it just felt like a lot of stuff happening, you know. The interference was dumb. It went long, like you said, it went about 23, 24 minutes. You know, there wasn't any substance in this match, ultimately. There's a lot of stuff happening.
Exactly.
But not substance.
Yes, that was what it was trying to say with the with the complete lack of psychology here.
Yeah, exactly. There's no substance
behind it. And you can Dragon Gate often has their own psychology to matches, but there just was none here.
No, I thought this was a shining example of what we were talking about. At Doi in particular, as you mentioned. You know, even in the match with Shingo, it always takes two or three Bakatari sliding kicks. The Doi 555 will be used in
you
between
know,
them.
With Naoki Doi, I can see it because ultimately his finishing move is just a single leg drop kick.
That is true.
And I can see him saying, okay, my finishing move is just a single leg drop kick. Let's go for another one.
What? Yeah, that's true. Maybe he should just use, like, the muscular bomb.
Yeah.
More. They teased that in this match with T-Hawk. They actually had a really kind of alright sequence, and they had a back and forth between the muscular bomb, and that he kind of, like, countered it into the night ride. But he countered it again and ended up with a power bomb. So, like, the moves themselves and what they do is kind of good, but like you said, it didn't really matter or mean anything, ultimately. And I think that's always been my problem with Dragon Gate, when you look at it, and that's kind of how I feel about Dragon Gate as a whole. And eventually, when we watch these shows, there are guys I like I said, that kind of do things in their own good way, like Eita. You know, and like I said, I'll always have a soft spot for Hulk, you know, and Big R, obviously, Mochizuki. But that's kind of how I feel about Dragon Gate on the whole, you know, whenever I watch it. And I have to say this, though. When you told me this, because earlier on you told me that we would make this and DDT the main focus of the show, I'm not going to lie, I lost my smile a bit, that I was going to go back to Dragon Gate. But, you know, it ultimately, you know, like I said, there were some good matches. I think the tournament on the whole had its good and bad points.
Yes.
I don't know if T-Hawk was the right person to win. I kind of definitely think he wasn't, to be honest with you. But, you know, it leads into the big show of the year. I don't know. Like you said, I think that's a great point, because a lot of people say that about T-Hawk. They don't like him. He's obviously not connecting, and his matches, he's not really that over to me.
No.
I'm not a super Dragon Gate fan, so I may be wrong on this, but he appears to me to not be that over. I would have went with someone else if I had the choice. I think Eita could have won, and that would have been great. That's probably what I would have
done. Yeah, Eita would have been great. That would be.
And what do you think about Yamato as babyface champion as well?
Yeah, I feel like it's not really connecting either.
Yeah, he's much better suited to be a heel.
Absolutely.
Like and T-Hawk's not the guy. I don't like that matchup. Heel T-Hawk versus babyface Yamato.
Yeah.
You know, as the main event to your biggest show of the year. So, you know, that's kind of how I'm feeling.
Yeah. So let's go to this biggest show of the year.
Yeah.
July 23rd, Kobe World Hall in Hyogo. We have a card. It's a tournament to set up the next challenger for the Open the Triangle Gate title, and the winners of this tournament, they are going to face the champions on this very same night. We have four teams in this tournament, and the matches can be won by two count special rule here. For Over Generation, we have Gamma Eta and Takahiro Yamamura. For the Jimmies, Genki Yoriguchi, AJ Jimmy, Jimmy Susumu, and Ryo Jimmy Saito. For Maximum, Big R Shimizu, Benkei, and Kotoka. And that's one thing that I just can't get over too, Dylan, is that Naoki Doi and Masato Yoshino are back together. I just can't get over that.
Wrestlers are very trusting people, naturally. I can speak for this from experience. even if you do bad things, you just want to go back to someone, even if they turn on you over and over. You know, like, much like in real life, I'm the same way. The wrestlers, it's the wrestling thing, Striga, you don't understand. I'm completely with Yoshino. I'm completely with Speed Muscle getting back together. I trust Doi. He will not turn on Yoshino this time. That's all. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I guess. I guess so. For Tribe Vanguard, we have BB Hulk, KZ, and Yosuke Santamaria. And those four teams are battling for the number one contendership. And on the same night, they are the winner of this tournament is going to face Shingo Takagi, Takashi Yoshida, and El Linderman, the champions. And what do you think about Takashi Yoshida now, after he had to drop the Cyber Kong mask?
That's true. He did lose the match in that crazy cage match at Dead or Alive. He lost the gimmick. He's back to his normal name now. What do you think of his ring attire?
Well, you know, for him, it's a new role. It's a new chance. And I think the most positive thing I can say about him is that his facial expressions are very good. For a guy who was working under a mask and you couldn't really see the facial expressions under his mask and I think he's doing a very good job with that. Except for that, he's still the same guy.
Yeah, that's basically what I was thinking. Like, he's kind of the same.
It's a new chance for him. I think it's the best that could happen to him because he was stuck in this role and now he's just a different character.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because a lot of these guys, I think, are really good, but they're stuck in Dragon Gate. I think they'd be a lot better and more of a different style. Or I would at least enjoy them more. With Cyber Kong, it's like, or Yoshida now, I don't know where else he would really work outside of Dragon Gate. So I think that he has a certain charm to him in here. So that's really kind of how I feel about it. But like you said, he's kind of the same as he's always been.
These are the six-man tag team matches we have on that show. Then we have three title matches left. Jimmy Kagetora is defending the Brave Gate title against Flamita, which should be a very good match. But the Brave Gate matches on these big shows are usually placed at the bottom of a card and get like 12 to 15 minutes. Yeah.
Not necessarily a bad thing.
Nope. We have for the Open the Twin Gate Unified Tag Team Championship, Shima and Dragon Kid defending against Naoki Doi and Masato Yoshino.
Yes, my favorite tag team.
Yes. They are a great tag team.
No. What do you think about Shima and Dragon Kid as a tag team?
Oh man, I like them as a tag team because I really love how they have this double team finishing move. Dragon Kid usually does his crucifix kind of driver into a pinning combination, and they added Shima doing a drop kick into this move to make this a double team move, and I really like that.
And I love the move.
Yeah,
go on. No, I said I love the move too, where Dragon Kid, they stand on opposite corners. Dragon Kid hits the Rana, and Shima comes right off with Meteora.
Yes, I was going to mention exactly the same move. Yes.
Yeah, that's a freaking cool move.
Yeah, it is.
I always like them. They fit together as a tag team. Some tag teams, it feels like, you know, they're just two guys thrown together, or like Speed Muscle. It's like, we've done this so many times that it kind of always is the same. Why are we doing this again? But like with Shima and Dragon Kid, they fit together as a tag team really well. So I like that.
They do.
Part of their...
And of course, we mentioned the match before. Yamato defending the Open the Dream Gate Championship, the top championship in Dragon Gate, against T-Hawk. Looks like a decent card for the biggest show of the year, I think. But, yeah they're probably going to sell out because they are Dragon Gate. It's the hometown.
And if they don't, they'll tell you. Well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but it's going to be a fun show, as always, very long, as always. And Dylan... Except for G1 Climax, except for DDT's Big Show in Sumo Hall, and except for this one we just talked about, there is another show I wanted to just quickly go over with you before getting out of here for this week.
Yeah.
It's the biggest show of Big Japan's calendar year. It's BJW Ryogoku Tan on July 17, the same day as the G1 Climax opens. They are going to be live on Samurai TV from Sumo Hall with a 10-match card, and we are going to talk about these 10 matches right here. First of all, we have Kota Sekifuda returning to action after, I think he had a knee injury that kept him out of action for a couple of months. Ryuichi Sekine and Tatsuhiko Yoshino against Kota Sekifuda and Yuya Aoki.
And okay, I want to stop you right there real quick, because I want to call back to the Dragon Gate show, because this immediately came to my mind when you said about the two count rules. Ryuichi Sekine used to do a gimmick in K-Dojo where he won matches via one count when I first started. So I want to see that brought back in some form to either Dragon Gate or BJW, especially with Sekine doing this match now.
Right. And if you hadn't stopped me, I would have stopped myself, because I watched the June 28 Japan show over the weekend. And there was an outstanding match, Takuya Nomura and Tatsuki Yoshino against Daisuke Sekimoto and Yuji Okabayashi. Yoshino was fantastic here.
That's exactly what I was going to bring. Did you see his escape from the portrait rack?
Yes.
Oh, man. Yoshino, on the last podcast, I mentioned how I wanted to buy his keychain, but they were sold out. They need to restock this keychain, because I love Yoshino, one of the most underrated talents in Japan. I love this dude. Oh, he needs amazing. To get a big push in the junior division now. Dude is great. That was a freaking amazing match. You're totally right. I love that match.
Special six-man tag match. This is one for you, Dylan. The Great Kojika, Tsutomu Osugi, and Hercules Zenga, the tag team of Speed of Sounds. They're facing Brahman Chu, Brahman K, and Kendo Kashin.
Oh my god. You know, Speed of Sounds are like a really awesome and underrated team. I was just talking to somebody who was like, they saw them face Strong BJ.
Yeah.
And they were like, whoa, these guys are really good. Like, I never knew. I never saw them do their thing. They're mostly fighting the Brahmins all the time. So, you know, but this match, it will be, I give it the rating of a bona fide hoot.
Yeah, the bona fide hoot is always a great rating. And this next match is also going to be a bona fide hoot, because Masakatsu Funaki steps into the ring of Big Japan Pro Wrestling, teaming with Katsumi Kikuta against Yoshihisa Uto and Takuya Nomura. Man.
Oh, man. That will be a hoot.
That will be a hoot. We have a death match. I don't think the stipulation has been finalized yet, but I can check while I talk about the show on the Dragon Gate, on the Big Japan site. It's a death match between, on one side, we have Yuko Miyamoto and Isami Kodaka. And on the other side, we have Takumi Tsukamoto and Toshiyuki Sakuda. Then we have a match. The stipulation is concrete block overall death match. Ayaki Numasawa and Masashi Takeda against Minoru Fujita and Kankuro Hoshino. And then we go to the title matches. And the first title match is for the Big Japan Junior Heavyweight title. The winners of the league, Shinobu and Katsuki Hashimoto, face off for the championship. First of all, Dylan, what did you think about this Junior Heavyweight League?
I think it was pretty cool overall. I think it's a great thing that they're doing. I loved all the participants. They all had really good matches with each other.
Yeah.
For the most part, I thought, you know, if you watch it, you could just handpick any match for the tournament, and you're probably going to enjoy it, because all the guys are really good. I thought this was an interesting move to put. You know, I think from the beginning, most people thought Keihash would end up winning the belt. I think that the division was started to give him a bit of a platform going forward. Right. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I personally would have liked to have seen Yoshino get it. I think he is the best wrestler. Shinobu is a fair challenger. I've always been a secret fan of his. You know, I think this will be a really good match and a good way to kick off the division overall. I think the tournament was a success overall, and I think it's good they had these guys go against each other. And I think Yoshino is such a great talent. I'd love to see him push more. I'm so happy to see him in that tech match that we talked about. But overall, no complaints, really.
You know, I've seen Shinobu and Takuya Nomura from Shinkiba First Ring on June 21st. And Shinobu in that match used the Argentine coaster. Finishing move of Yoshito Sasaki back then. And Shinobu and Sasaki used to have a kind of a dysfunctional tag team story back then.
That was
something I saw. Then I just found out the stipulation is going to be an iron cage and KMG Deathmatch for the Yakinichu Kenju against Tsukamoto and Sakura match. K stands for Kilobyte Lawnmower. What? Kilobyte Lawnmowers, it says here. Mega Hammer, Giga Ladder, and Table. Of course. Yes.
I think this match came from the mind of one man, and his name is Isami Konaka.
Yes.
I feel like.
Looks like it. And then we had a... I want to say DDT or Dragon, but I want to say Big Japan. They had a fan voting for the final four matches on this card to determine the main event of this show. And of course, the Big Japan Deathmatch Heavyweight Championship match won again. So match 7 on this card for the Yokohama Shopping Street 6-man tag team title is Ryota Hama, Yasufumi Nakanoe, who recently both signed with Big Japan Pro Wrestling, and their champion partner Shogun Okamoto against the challenging team of Kohei Sato, Daichi Hashimoto, and Hideyoshi Kamitani. Great match.
Great match. I know, this is going to be fun.
Yes. For the Big Japan Strong World Heavyweight title, this match was relegated to place 3 in the fan voting. It's Hideki Suzuki versus Ryuichi Kawakami. And Dylan, I think you've seen the Kurikan All Show too. When I saw Suzuki and Kawakami going at it with elbow strikes, I wanted to see that match right now.
Oh,
right,
man.
In that moment, I totally wanted to see the match.
Oh, I totally agree with you. This year, I think, has been, I don't want to say rebirth, Kawakami, but I think that, you know, when you think about it, he was teaming up with Moon Vulcan partner, Uto versus Kakuta and Kawakami in that match. So to me, like you said, I'm totally with you on this. I love Kawakami right now. I think he's definitely regained his form that he had before his big injury that kind of slowed him down for a while. He's back. This is going to be a great match. I am supremely looking forward to this match. I think it will be an excellent performance for both men. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of Suzuki. Everybody knows that. He was in my match of the year versus Okabayashi in May. Yeah. And I think this match can be really great. I'm not surprised that the fan voting went more toward the tag titles. I wasn't surprised as well the deathmatch titles overall, but that I think this is a match I'm going to enjoy the most on the show.
Right, no surprise that the tag team title match was voted to be the semi-main of that show because of the people in that match. Daisuke Sekimoto and Yuji Kobayashi defend against Abdullah Kobayashi and Ruji Ito, four of the biggest stars of the promotion. Maybe the four biggest stars of the promotion. So no surprise.
And I like it. I like it. There was some complaining on Twitter, some harsh criticism thrown this way, and a lot of backlash towards the criticizers, of course. But I was kind of sitting back thinking about this, and I just think this match is really cool.
Yeah.
That it's combining the two biggest stars of the heavyweights, the native heavyweights, and the deathmatch guys going against each other. It's kind of like bringing the two sides of the company together
exactly.
For the biggest show of the year match.
Yes.
So I think it's cool. Like, you know, I really like it.
I am completely on your side on that. Yes.
Yeah.
And I see Kobayashi and Ruji Ito winning because it's going to be a way to get the title off of Strong BJ.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think Ito is going to have a little bit of a non-deathmatch run, particularly going for both of these guys in the tag division.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to see Ito in more regular matches going forward in the future.
Right. And also, in the main event, then, Masaya Takahashi versus Taka Yuki Ueki for the Deathmatch Heavyweight Championship. And there is also, you mentioned people complaining. There's been a little bit complaining about that card. That card isn't necessarily as big. And it isn't. But this card is all about, except for the tag team title match, it's all about the young guys getting an opportunity. And that's really cool because Big Japan has a lot of up-and-coming young guys, great talent on the roster. The Big Japan Junior Heavyweight League has been fun, and they are introducing a new championship. And overall, I'm very happy with that card.
I like the card. I don't know. I really like this card. I think it's going to be a heck of a show. And it's for the fans of the promotion. We talked about it with the fan voting. Right. Ueki is not exactly a traditional main eventer when you think about it by any means.
No.
And this... I thought the tag match would win the fan vote, to be honest with you. So I think you have to give this a win for Masashi. The dude, you know, when you look at this match with Takeda and Ueki, that you have to... This would be like if Yoshihashi won a fan poll to be the main event of the New Japan Dome. You know, like a guy that no one really sees as a main eventer, but has his own popularity. He got unexpectedly placed in this title match, or inexplicably, not necessarily unexpectedly. And now he's getting a chance to main event the biggest show of the year. And what other promotion would you see something like that where the fans decide, even if it goes against their traditional main events or what the company may necessarily see as their biggest stars? This is for the fans. This show is for the fans. I think it's a great card up and down. I'm super excited for it. I completely disagree with anyone criticizing this card. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be live on Samurai TV, as I mentioned. It's, yep. Big Japan is usually live 3 times a year on Samurai TV. It's for Endless Survivor in May. It's for Big Japan Death in Vegas in December, and for this one here, Sumo Hall, in July. So that's going to be a very cool show. And Dylan, the best part about it is that Dragon Gate isn't on the same day, because for the last couple of years, the opening day of G1, this show and sometimes even the Dragon Gate Big Show of the Year were on the same day, so at least we got the Dragon Gate show the week after. But yeah, overall, a lot of great things happening in Japan. Is there something you want to go over on the Yoshi side of things?
Well, I did a show recently, actually, yes, where I went over everything in the Joshi scene going on. There's a lot going on with the Mae Young Classic, some people getting announced there, Io Shirai's injury. I believe we talked about it on the last episode.
Yes.
And there's a lot going forward with the 5-star Grand Prix. A lot of, we don't really know how that's going to work out with the WWE tournament going on at the same time. And it's just, there's a lot going on. I really want to plug my appearance on the Ringside Revolution podcast with my friend Alexandra. We went a long time. It was 2.5-3 hours almost of, Joshi covered about half of it. Probably the back half of the show was about Joshi. So if you want to hear anything about that, please listen to that show, because we put a lot of work into it. It was really good. I had a hoot. It was a hoot of a time going on there. And there's just a lot going on right now. And hopefully we can talk about that. Seedring is doing a lot of good things right now as well.
Yep.
And recently,
Pure J is coming up.
Yeah, Pure J is starting up. So there's just a lot of news going on right now. And also, something I will mention, a little nugget that we didn't talk about on the show, because it got announced afterwards, is that there was an announcement recently with the Best Friends team of Tsukasa Fujimoto and Arisa Nakajima, and as well as the team of Avid Rival, which is Misaki Ohata and Ryu Mizunami. They are going to have a 3-match series.
Oh, man.
Going forward in August. It's going to be 3 times in 3 different promotions. These two are great tag teams. Avid Rival is a lot in wave sometimes, especially with Mizunami. So you might not get to see them a lot, but now with this 3-match series, you are going to get a chance to see them. So I would implore everyone to check out the Avid Rival versus Best Friends series coming up in August. And when that happens, I'll definitely try to see if we can't talk about it on this show too, because it's going to be a real hoot of a time. Like I said, I don't want to keep saying that, but it's going to be a great time. Some great matches coming up. Avid Rival and Best Friends are a great team. And Best Friends are arguably the two strongest stars at Joshi right now, with Nakajima and Fujimoto, who are both excellent wrestlers. Avid Rival, very underrated, so check that out.
Right. Yeah, Alex is doing very good stuff covering all the Joshi bases. And one thing I wanted to mention before we go out here is that Nico Nico, the service that has been offering a lot of shows in Japan, like smaller Big Japan shows, like Wrestle One, Dojo shows, the Ace shows, some smaller All Japan shows, and independent shows like Guts World, J Stage, and so on. They now have created a YouTube subscription page, and you can subscribe to this YouTube subscription page for only $5 a month. And if you want to know how to get there, I think Morten put something up on his Twitter. Is it right?
Yes, I believe so.
I believe so. Especially interesting for me, as Germany blocks YouTube subscription services, so I have to find a way around that. So Morten offers something for me. So go follow Morten at Morten VH, MORTENVH on Twitter. He's a great guy to follow. Also, of course, you can follow the two of us on Twitter. Go first, Dylan.
That's right. Check me out on Twitter at DylanZeroSky. I was away from Twitter this weekend. I was visiting family. Some unexpected occurrences happening while I'm gone. As I mentioned, that's real quick. Let me plug my appearance on the podcast again.
Right.
At the Wrestling with Words Network, the Ringside Revolution podcast. I was with there with Alex. It was a great time. I thought she would hate me, but she hated me so much we talked for like 6 hours. And three of it was recorded. We had a great time with all sorts of fun stuff on that show in both American wrestling. We even talked about Mexican wrestling. Alex trying to speak Spanish was hilarious. I'm not going to lie. But I know she's listening, so I apologize for throwing you under the bus that way. But speaking of Mexican wrestling, check out Lucha Talk, which is my other show on the MLW Radio Network. We're going to be recording it again tonight. I'm double dipping on this day, Springer. So it's going to be a lot to do today. You know, I just want to point out that I had a date planned today, Striga, and I blew it off completely. Nobody gets in my way. No woman, no dates, no nothing. The Eastern Lariat, and as well as Lucha Talk, are always my number one priorities in life,
you know,
not just wrestling.
That's almost as much dedication as I showed for getting up at 5 in the morning for Tanahashi versus Billy Gunn.
Yeah, but you like Billy Gunn.
Yes.
So that's like a treat for you. That's like, you know, waking up to...
I wouldn't go as far as that.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, there's been times where I've stayed up until the middle of the night to watch these shows. But to be fair, I'm kind of an insomniac anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But I think we can both make fair claims to being very dedicated followers and podcasters as well. So
yes.
And I always enjoy doing the show with you. Where can they find you on Twitter?
People can find me on Twitter at Striga, STRIGGA. I post a lot of stuff about Japanese wrestling, mainly. Yeah. And also purlove.com. I recently updated the G1 cards, cagematch.net. We're in the process of adding more and more English-speaking team members to the team right now, as it's getting more and more difficult to find German-speaking people to, for example, do Yoshi. We have one right now, but it's difficult always to find one. And with the addition of some English-speaking team members, we have broadened our way of looking for team members, so that's good. So we're going to be able to cover more international promotions with that. So you can check out cagematch.net, always to be your resource for shows like the one Dylan and I do. I couldn't do the show without Cage Match. I couldn't do it.
Oh man, that would be a horrible sight. And the Cage Match, I think everyone agrees that whether on this show or really any show that covers Japanese wrestling, I think everyone knows your site. Everyone knows cagematch.net. You and Flash and all those guys over there are doing really great work. That's great news that you're expanding the team, that you're speaking to team members. And your Twitter is a treasure, especially if you want to set the record straight on No Sawa Wrong Guy's new name.
Yes.
That is where you go. That is exactly what I think of when I think of your Twitter. And I think it's great. I do want to mention one more thing before we get out of here. There's something very important that I wanted to bring up. And it has nothing to do with Japanese wrestling, but it does have to do with wrestling. I have to brag a little bit, and I have to talk about a promotion that we don't really talk about a lot for a lot of reasons. But it's formerly known as Impact Wrestling, now Global Force Wrestling.
Yes.
But I have to take credit for what was formerly my favorite football player on my favorite football team. He made his wrestling debut at Slammiversary.
Oh, man.
D'Angelo Williams. And everyone told me, they said, this is going to be horrible. We don't know what he's going to do. And I always told them, I know him. I've talked to him on Facebook before, believe it or not. So I knew that he was a lifelong fan, even when he was with my team. Not with the Panthers anymore. But I knew he was a lifelong fan, and he had a spectacular debut. This performance was loved by everyone who watched. People were watching just to see his match. It was amazing. I highly recommend watching D'Angelo Williams matches, teaming with Moose against Eli Drake and who was the other guy? I can't remember who he ended up with. But it was a great match, though. D'Angelo looked great. And I have to put it over this way, Striga, and I think it's something that I think we all need to remember when we think about wrestling, and that is that Memphis don't produce bad wrestlers. They're all good. And we saw it again on Slammiversary. I just wanted to put it that
up. I wanted to check out some. They are now Global Force Wrestling, right? Not yes, Impact, yes. Not TNA, Global Force. I wanted to check out some Global Force. Excuse me?
I'll probably still call him TNA. Anyway.
Yeah. It's difficult to adjust after 15 years.
Yeah.
But I'm probably going to check out some of their stuff because now Michimaru Fuji and Taichi Ishimori have been there too.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what they're up to. That looks really good. But Memphis don't produce bad wrestling. That's the message I want to close with.
Okay, so then this has been it for the Eastern Lariat for this week. Enjoy all the wrestling. We're going to be eventually back when the G1 Climax starts. So, I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.